Well, good morning, family. I'd like to welcome you here. Good to have you. If you're visiting with us, we're especially thankful to have you in our presence today. Stick around for our fellowship meal afterwards, and we'll spend some time getting to know you. It's nice to have some rain, especially on a day that we're going to spend talking about the vine, to have some extra green out there. So I'm thankful for that. In a few months here, we'll be in John 15, so you can stay in John 15 there. In a few months, do we have any raspberry harvesters among us? Some folks who are going to go gather some raspberries? Don't come to my house, is my advice. I took this picture yesterday of my sorry attempt at raspberry bushes. And I know it's not raspberry season, but if you want to know what my raspberries are going to look like in the fall, this is as good a representation as waiting for it. Here's a little bit bigger shot there. It's going to look the same come fall and raspberry picking season, okay? The point is that the fruit, or lack thereof, it says something about the gardener, doesn't it? And I take full responsibility for this. I told my wife, I said, I'm going to say something about my raspberry bushes and know that I realize you have had nothing to do with it. You have let me do this on my own. And so I take full responsibility for that. John 15, 1, we're talking about another farmer, another vine dresser, or as the American Standard Version, or the King James Version says, the husbandman. It's not talking about husbands. The husbandman was a farmer, was a caretaker of agriculture. Husbandry has to do with agriculture. Jesus says, I am the true vine, and my Father is the husbandman. Verse 8 in John 15, by this my Father is glorified, that you bear much fruit, and so prove to be my disciples. God's fruit, he says there, it declares his glory. And so you look at the fruit that God has produced, and it's not going to look anything like my raspberry bushes. You're going to see some incredible fruit, and it declares his glory. I was having a conversation with a friend of mine recently, and they were telling me about how their life, it had been troubled at the beginning, issues, you know, with the family, and they didn't know God, and they were reflecting on their current life now, and they said, I have this fruitful life, and it's not because of me. And it's not that my life is perfect, but I have family and relationships, and I know God, and it's this rich abundance of fruit, and I can't help but praise God for the fruit that he has grown in my life. And you look at a life like that, and you say, that is the fruit of the Father, because God's fruit looks like Jesus. God's in the business of growing people, and the people that God grows look like his Son. The attribute of God, we focused on an attribute of God last week, and that was contrasting him with perishable bread, that Jesus is nourishment that is imperishable, an imperishable source of nourishment. Today I want to talk and think about an attribute of God, his strength. And not the brute strength that defeats armies or moves mountains or sends the flood or divides the Red Sea, but the kind of strength that comes along with a father, a farmer, or a husbandman. Have you known a farmer? I mean, they're strong dudes, right? You shake their hand and they just smash your hand. They can't even help it. But it's not a one-day thing. Those guys are always on the job. And there's a strength that comes perhaps in the form of endurance. You don't change people in a day. God doesn't change people in a day. By his strength and endurance and his connection to his vine, Jesus, he produces fruit that leaves him well pleased. So come with me to chapter 15. It's another spring night. John focuses a lot on the Passover, which is springtime, Easter and all of that as we would think of it today. It's nighttime. They've gone through the washing of the feet. Judas has abandoned them. They've had the Lord's Supper. And John gives us this intimate look at conversations Jesus has. And he explains that the apostles are going to be growers of people, that they're going to produce fruit as well. And so under the full moon, Jesus shares some things with them. Look there in verse 2. Every branch in me that does not bear fruit, he takes away. And every branch that does bear fruit, he prunes that it may bear more fruit. Every branch that is not bearing fruit, think Judas. Think Judas Iscariot, who has just abandoned Jesus and the disciples. And Jesus has some harsh words for the branch that does not bear fruit. Verse 6, if anyone does not abide in me, he is thrown away like a branch and withers. And the branches are gathered and thrown into the fire and burned. What a sad state for this friend of Jesus, friends of the apostles, for Judas to be cast aside. And then he looks to the apostles who were there and he says, every fruit-bearing branch is pruned. And then what does he say in verse 3? Already you are clean. Pruning. If you're a good fruit-bearing plant, then what happens to you? You get parts of you chopped off so that you can produce more fruit. It's actually a painful process. But what is the pruning and what is the cleaning? He said, I've already pruned you. You're already clean by the word that I have spoken. You remember John 6, 56? If you want to flip back and glance there. Do you remember this pruning moment that we studied last week? Jesus says, For my flesh is true food and my blood is true drink. Whoever feeds on my flesh and drinks my blood abides in me and I in him. Do you remember how hard that statement was for people to accept? And suddenly all of these people were abandoning Jesus. The food ran out and people were pruned away and cast away. And the teaching became hard and the work became difficult. And the disciples had been pruned. And they didn't really have a good feeling inside. They just knew that they were with Jesus. He had pruned them already. They had heard difficult truths, and they had had difficult trials, and yet they were standing with Jesus because they needed to consume Jesus. They needed to abide, right? Abide is to make your home. They needed to make their home among Jesus. Responding to this I am idea, I am the true vine, it's beyond what Jesus gives. The vine gives life to the branch, which gives life to the fruit. It's how the juices go, right, from the vine into the fruit. But it's more than what Jesus gives us. But it's that Jesus is a life and a connection to the husbandman, to God, to the farmer, who by his tireless strength and endurance produces fruit in our lives. Conservation, right? Like nature conservation. It's another concept that is, it's almost eternal. It is never done. You don't wake up and you say, okay, we did our conservation of you know, natural resources for 3 months and we're done for the rest of the year. You're never finished with that kind of work. And it requires an eternal strength. And God, as the farmer and as the gardener, had worked long and hard in preparing the true vine, which is Jesus. I know we're speaking a lot in metaphor here, but I want to get the words and the ideas together. Go back to Isaiah, all the way back to the book of Isaiah. This old, ancient idea of a branch that would give life. God has been working at this. He's been farming for a long time. Isaiah chapter 11. It's going to talk about a branch or a stump of Jesse, right? Jesse was the father of David, King David. There shall come forth a shoot from the stump of Jesse, and a branch from his roots shall bear fruit. And this is where it really starts to sound like Jesus. And the Spirit of the Lord shall rest upon him, the Spirit of wisdom and understanding, the Spirit of counsel and might, the Spirit of knowledge and the fear of the Lord. Flip over to verse 10. What is the fruit of this branch, this ancient branch that God has been cultivating for ages? In that day, the root of Jesse, who shall stand as a signal for the people. Of him shall the nations inquire, and his resting place shall be glorious. In that day, the Lord will extend his hand yet a second time to recover the remnant, the remains of his people, from Assyria, from Egypt, from Pathros, from Cush, from Elam, from Shinar, from Hamath, and from the coastlands of the sea. God is saying in metaphor here, I'm preparing a living vine, okay? And that branch is going to come, and its business is growing people. And it's going to reach out its hand a second time to the remnant, which is the Jews, who by Jesus' time had sort of forgotten about God. He's going to reach his hand out to them again, but not just the Jews, but to all people. Assyria, Egypt, Pathros, that list is everybody surrounding the people of God. This vine is going to come out of the lineage of David, and it's going to be life, and God has been preparing it for ages, for eternity. John 15, verse 5, we've talked about the gardener, now let's talk about the vine. I am the vine, ye are the branches. So we have the vine and the husbandman. Now we have the vine and the branches, speaking to his apostles. And I have the older versions up here because the ye, right? That's not just old people talk. That's plural, okay? If I say you, it's one person. If I say ye, it's referring to more than one. He's speaking to his 11 here. Ye are the branches. The vine chose ye, chose the many to be branches so that the branches could do what? Here comes those words with the THs again. So they could abideth, which means to be at home with God and to always be at home with God. Remember, if it has a TH, it's an ongoing action, abideth. And to bear, and to beareth, to bear fruit, but not just once, but to always be bearing fruit. Have you thought about how Jesus made his home with these apostles to abide? We think of it now like, okay, Jesus is in heaven and we're here, and so it's kind of hard for me to always encapsulate that. But Jesus was saying, notice how I made my life amongst you. It's not just because they all lived in one house. Right? They didn't just have like a frat house where everyone just lived together. It had nothing to do with a house. They actually never lived in a house. And Jesus said, if you're going to follow me, then your pillow is going to be more like a stone. And if you have to make your parents happy in their home, then you really can't come and follow me because this is a mobile operation. They went to weddings together and they ate meals together and they cared for sick family members together, and they traveled together, and they worshiped together. Jesus was at home with these men for years. And he's saying, you now need to make the decision to be at home with me. So let's put these pieces together. It's God's strength and plan, right? It's the Father who has the endurance and the plan to make this whole thing of bearing fruit possible. And then there's Jesus as the living vine. And what does Jesus add to this? Grace and truth. That's the nourishing juices that flow from the vine through the branch into the fruit. Grace and truth. And so we're left with the branches. What are the branches supposed to do? Well, they connect the fruit to the vine and to the Father. And then I get to beareth, to bear. I'm the vine and you are the branches. Whoever abides in me and I in him, he it is that bears much fruit. And I can't help but think about wait, W-E-I-G-H-T. Are people heavy? That doesn't sound good, does it? Are people heavy? Okay, not just people. Are relationships heavy? The relationships that you have. You know, your marriage and your children and your brothers and sisters and your parents. I mean, they're good, and we would be lost without them, but there's a weight, right? It's not a free ride. There is a weight. He's asking these men to bear fruit. He's not asking them to be the farmer. Okay, I want you to create the plan, and I want you to orchestrate situations. No, that's the farmer's job. Okay, I want you to take responsibility for these people's sins, and I want you to be the one with all the answers. No, that's the vine. What do the branches do? Well, they bear the fruit. They hold the weight of that fruit through relationship. And in doing that, they connect it to the life-giving grace and truth of Jesus and to the cosmic plan of salvation that is God. Think about yourself. We're all fruit of some other person who through relationship imparted Jesus to us. Think back in your life to the people who bore with you when you were just a young, stubborn person, right? Think about what they put up with to help you. Think about what people put up with and are continually putting up with me to help me as I grow and become who God wants me to be. Like I said, they didn't necessarily create everything like the farmer, and they weren't the source of grace and truth like the vine, but they bore the weight of relationship and maintained the connection. He that lives in me and continues to live in me, who makes his home in me, and I in him, the same bear much fruit. For apart from me, you can do nothing. John 15, 9 through 11. As the Father has loved me, so I have loved you. Abide in my love. If you keep my commandments, you will abide in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commandments and abide in his love. These things I have spoken to you, that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be full. What is Jesus asking the apostles to give? He's about to leave, and he's giving them their final instructions, and he's saying, what am I asking you to give? He's asking them to give the same relationship that he had with the Father. He's saying, what I have shown you, now think about what Jesus did. We sort of balk sometimes, you know, the commands of Jesus, the law of Jesus. Well, you know, it's more of a law of love, and you just do things because it's the right thing. But did you catch the language there? What did Jesus do in relation to his Father? He obeyed his Father's commands. I mean, if obedience wasn't beneath Jesus, how about for the branches? But he's not saying this in a you better bear fruit sense, right? Because we know the rest of the story of these men. He's saying you have what it takes. You've lived with me. You know the nature of growing fruit and of passing it on to people. Truthfully, we are not the farmer and we are not the vine. And none of us can offer somebody everything. There's a book called Strong Fathers, Strong Daughters, and Dr. Meg Meeker, I don't know who she is, but I wanted to borrow this idea from his book. So she's a pediatric doctor, and she dealt with children and with adults as well, and she did some counseling. And so you go in for a physical exam. Imagine going in for a physical, and the doctor sits you down, and they check all of your bodily functions, and they ask you how your medication and your diet is. And then at the end, they write this prescription. And the prescription in the end is, show those in your life God. Because that's what her advice is to fathers. She's saying, if you want to give something lasting to your daughters, here's your prescription. You show them who God is. To put it simply, your daughter needs God for two reasons. She needs help and she needs hope. God gives help and he promises her that the future will be better. And she goes on to say, fathers, and I think this expands to more than just fathers, but she goes on to say, fathers, as great as you are in your job and as strong as you are and all of your accomplishments, you're not going to be everything for your daughter. You are going to fail. I am going to fail. And she says the only prescription for that is to show them who God is. Because when you fail, he will help them where you cannot. And when they need hope, he will give them hope where they cannot. It's because God's the farmer and Jesus is the life. And sometimes we just hold on to people for dear life. Not taking responsibility for their actions, right? And that's what I want to get into here, is the help and the hope. John 15, 12 through the end of verse 17. This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, that someone lay down his life for his friends. You are my friends if you do what I command you. No longer do I call you servants, for the servant does not know what his master is doing, but I have called you friends, for all that I have heard from my Father I have made known to you. You did not choose me, but I chose you and appointed you that you should go and bear fruit and that your fruit should abide, so that whatever you ask the Father in my name, he may give it to you. These things I command you so that you will love one another. What kind of help does God's infinite strength give us as we connect with people through relationships? A few things we've already talked about. Those who are obedient to the commands of Christ are going to be pruned. You're going to have difficult truths that you face in your life, and you're going to have difficult trials. And frankly, God's the only one that is going to see you through those things. And if it's somebody else in the church, or it's a preacher or an elder, or it's somebody else that you're solely dependent on, I'm sorry, but we're going to fail you at some point. God is the one that you have to be connected to as you go through those pruning moments. The obedient are going to experience loss when, sadly, people go the way of Judas. Right? It hurts when family members aren't fruitful and their life just collapses in this burning heap, and they're either burned off by God or they burn out themselves and they reject God and they betray him. And I don't say that lightly or happily, because that is hard. And frankly, God's the only one that will see us through those hard times. We need God's help. And then what does Jesus say in there about what it is to be a true friend? Greater love has no one than this, that someone lay down his life for his friends. Now, Jesus ultimately laid down his life by dying, but some of us are going to lay down our life by day after day being the right person, being the faithful person. We're going to lay down the life that we thought we were going to have, and we're going to do what God did for us. We're going to sacrifice, and we're going to give, and we're going to love people. And frankly, we all need God's help to accomplish that as well. But thankfully, though, there's hope in this too. God's infinite strength gives hope. What did he say there in verse 11? These things I speak to you, that my joy may be in you, and that your joy may be full. So I stepped onto the campus of the University of Wyoming, and I was a freshman, and my parents got me all moved in, and we spent a couple days, and then they left, and I go, and I hop on this elevator, and there's some other dudes in the elevator, and I kid you not, my parents hadn't been gone a few hours, and I meet these strange guys, and they say, hey, we're going to be watching something pornographic. You want to come and watch that? Like a mother's worst nightmare, right? We leave our son and he's being confronted with this question. And that's what these guys thought was going to bring them joy and happiness, was to go and do that. And so I got out of that elevator. I wished I would have hit the emergency button, right, and climbed out. But I said no, I got out of the elevator. And a few days later, my campus minister, you know, God bless him for all he did for me, but he said, do you want to come over to my house? And do you want to spend time with my family? I mean, there's joy in people who have been faithful, right? You go and you be with a Christian family, and they're not perfect, and mom and dad sometimes get after each other, and sometimes the kids disobey, and the house breaks, and the car breaks, and the iPhone breaks, and all of this stuff, and life isn't perfect. But there is a peace in a family that is bearing fruit according to the way God would have them. It's a whole lot better than going to be with those frat boys, I can tell you that. There was hope. There is, what does he say about, I have called you friends? I have called you friends so that you may lay down your life for your friends, but also so that you can know the plan. God has a plan. And part of being in friendship with God and imparting that friendship to others is letting them know that God has a plan. What a blessing that we're not just mindless slaves, but that we have a part in the big plan of God. God helps us in our pruning. He helps us when there are fruitless branches that are burned off. He helps us as we lay down our life. There is hope of the joy of a strong Christian fellowship. There is hope in knowing that God has a plan. And finally, verse 16. That's not the one I wanted to read. Yeah, that is the one I wanted to read. Verse 16. You did not choose me, but I chose you and appointed you that you should go and bear fruit, and that your fruit should abide. Remember, not just to live, but to go on living. So that whatever you ask the Father in my name, he may give it to you. There's the hope of influence with the Creator of the universe. Does that just blow your mind? Now, you've probably been on a project, right? And you've been working on something, and you've been having, you know, meetings and conversations, and sometimes people come who really haven't been a part of the work, and they sort of throw ideas in. Doesn't that drive you crazy sometimes? I mean, maybe it's a good idea, but sometimes it kind of drives you crazy. Notice what God says here. He says, if you're working with me in the field, and you're working alongside me, and we're sweating together, he's like, I'll listen to what you have to say. You can influence me through my prayers, because I know you're working toward the same purpose. Isn't that what he says there? If you're working alongside God and you're producing fruit, whatever you ask the Father in my name, he will give it to you. What an incredible message of hope. What have I tried to say today? A Christian looks like Christ. Living like Christ produces his fruit in others. God's fruit is produced in us when we bear that fruit in a Christ-like manner. When we have relationships with people and we bear the weight of that relationship and we do it like Christ would. The amazing thing to me is that all of this, God's reason for wanting us to have a fruitful and a good life, it really does not start out with God wanting us to have a good life. Now, that's the end result. But you know why God wants you to have a fruitful life in him? For his good pleasure. That's the reason. Okay, that's the reason that we do what we do. First and foremost, it's for God's good pleasure. Now, you go to a car salesman, and he wants you to give him your money for his pleasure, right? But he didn't work for your money. He didn't give you your money. Maybe he's, I have a friend who's a car salesman, so I'm not running down all car salesmen. But maybe he's trying to manipulate you. But we're not talking about another person. We're talking about God who created you. And it is his good pleasure that draws you to bear fruit for him. So I want to leave you with this thought. Here's your challenge for the week. Who has bore you? Who is bearing you, right? Who are your mentors? Who are the people in your life that when you're going through pruning or you're going through loss or you're struggling with laying down your life for someone, who do you turn to? And do you turn to them and do you turn to God? Who is mentoring you? And I'm not sure that that ever ends, right? Do you ever get old enough that you don't need someone to be that person for you? And then the flip side, who are you mentoring, right? Who are you giving hope? Joyful Christian fellowship, informing them about the plan of God and lifting them up in prayer. Think about that this week. Who is helping bear you, right? Because we're all heavy. I don't mean that as an insult. And who are we bearing in our relationships? What do you say when people say to you, how are you? Sometimes we say good, right? Sometimes we say, I'm busy. How are you today? I'm pretty busy. How are you doing this week? I'm pretty busy, right? We get busy. But more and more, either people wish that they said this or people really say this. How are you doing? Well, I'm lonely. Which is crazy, right? Because we have social media and we have all of these activities and stuff. And yet, fundamentally, people today more and more are lonely. God says, you have what it takes. Go bear fruit in that person's life through relationship. God bless you as you bear fruit. I stand before a room full of people who are fruitful. I challenge you to continue in that life and to trust in God as he works in you to produce fruit in others. Thank you for your attention. I believe Rocky has a song for us to stand and sing. If there's a need that the church can help you with, come forward while we stand and sing together. 608.